Welcome to Convergently Speaking. Today you've got Dan and Caitlin talking about the deciding functions in the Myers-Briggs system.
Welcome to Convergently Speaking. Today I've got Caitlin back with us again. You haven't been on the show in the foreground for... You've been in the background, but you haven't been in the foreground for quite some time.
No, I guess I haven't. Yeah, I'm always hearing what's going on and editing, but haven't actually been on the mic for quite a while.
Yeah, so it's good to have you here again, and we've been wanting to do this episode for a while, mainly because we want to share some of the excitement that we've had. It's been a while now, going deeper on some concepts in personality type and the ways in which it helps us to understand ourselves and each other, and for me, couples that come in for counseling. But first up, Caitlin, I just wanted to ask, just for a bit of context, like, what's been happening for you around personality and type, and I suppose what spurred your interest, your renewed interest lately?
Yeah, well, I've sort of been following along as you've been getting into it and listening to the same podcasts you did and following some of the same people. So I've learned along with you as you did your training, and we've really found it helpful as a shorthand, I guess, within our relationship. We learned some of the differences that could potentially and did cause issues for us. And so that was really helpful, because then we could sort of understand what was going on and change some things. That made a big difference. But even just as we're talking about people in our lives and having different interactions, it's always interesting. We have this shorthand and this understanding that we can that we talk about. On my own, I've been doing some more learning, maybe even beyond what you have, about some different topics. And
yeah, certainly down a few rabbit holes I haven't been down as far as you.
Yeah, no, that's true. So yeah, that's been really interesting. And so I can bring some of those insights to this as we talk about it today.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about that. I think what we'll do is I'll start with a bit of the higher level idea or concept that we're going to talk about, and then I'll hand it over to you, Caitlin, to, I suppose, add on how you found this helpful in a practical way. Does that sound good?
Yep, sounds good. Go for it.
So within the Myers-Briggs personality system, I've talked previously about the fact that we all have four cognitive functions. In the context of our cognitive functions, one of our first two functions is always introverted. So it's a function that we do internally, and one is always extroverted. In addition, one of these is also always a learning function, so a way in which we learn and gather and take in information. And the other one is a decision-making function. And for the sake of this episode, we're actually just going to hone in on the decision-making functions. So what do we mean when we say decision-making functions? It is as simple as it sounds. It's literally the piece of our personality that we use to make our decisions. And there's four different options, four different flavors within Myers-Briggs for what our function, our decision-making function could be. So for feelers, people with the letter F in their personality type, you have the option of either being an extroverted feeler or an introverted feeler. And for thinkers, you have the option of being either an extroverted thinker or an introverted thinker. The thing that we found, Caitlin and I both found really interesting, is to start to understand that introverted thinkers and introverted feelers actually have some pretty substantial things in common with one another. And the same goes for extroverted feelers and extroverted thinkers. You know, it stands to reason that if you're a feeler, no matter what flavor or feeling you have, you know, you have some similarities and almost camaraderie with other feelers. People that are feelers tend to have a focus on people and emotions rather than task in very simple terms. Whereas thinkers are a little bit more focused on logic and rationality and process and that kind of thing. It's an oversimplification, but it's a helpful delineation, you know, feelers, people, thinkers, ideas. So that's all well and good, and I suppose that's pretty well established as a difference between types. But actually learning was actually a Q&A that you listened to, Caitlin, where a question was put forward to some personality type experts that if you had to split all people into just two categories, so essentially only two personality types, what would the category be? And the answer came back that they would split it between introverted versus extroverted deciders, or people that use an introverted versus an extroverted decision-making function. And we both found that quite surprising, I suppose, and interesting to start to understand. Why is the delineation between whether your decision-making function happens inside of you versus more outside of you versus, well, really any other category, introvert, extrovert, sensor, intuitive, other cognitive functions and that kind of thing? And I'll give you the answer. Or at least what we have come to see as a big, big piece of this. For those that have an introverted decision-making function, so that's either introverted feeling or introverted thinking, what is shared between these people is a bias or an impulse to self-reference first. So essentially when making decisions, they will look to themselves and their own introverted experience. So for an introverted thinker, that would be their own internal subjective logic. And for an introverted feeler, it's more about their internal feeling world and their own values and that kind of thing. And so they'll go to themselves first and then secondarily go to the tribe. So they'll self-reference and then they'll other reference. Whereas for extroverted feelers, it's the opposite. So extroverted feelers tend to look to the tribe first and foremost. So for extroverted feelers, that will be looking to the opinions of people they know and people they respect, and looking to sort of the emotional climate and emotional reaction of these ideas that they're trying to make a decision about. And the extroverted thinkers will look to the tribe more in terms of ideas, and they'll be drawn more towards the empirical piece of whatever they're deciding. So they'd be more inclined to look to the science or particular experts in a field, or if they're going to friends and family, they'll be looking more at the logic that these people are bringing rather than the, let's say, the feeling perspective. So people with an introverted deciding function will reference themselves and then the tribe, and extroverted deciders will reference the tribe and then themselves.
And the other way of explaining the introverted versus extroverted that I've found helpful is that both extroverted decision-making functions sort of see more of a spectrum, because they're seeing more of the outside world. And so they'll, like, if it's a feeler, they'll kind of be aware of the feelings and values of the people around them. So that might be in real time, like they, you know, they're good at regulating in a group, understanding where the emotion of the group is. But then also just understanding, like, in society, where people are at and what sort of a social norm, that kind of thing, that'll be big. And the feelers especially would care about that. Probably thinkers too, like extroverted thinkers. Yeah, I don't know if that would be, probably not. It's not so much. And then the extroverted thinkers would be aware of like a broad range of logic, or, you know, so all the different ways that people out there would reason about a certain topic and all the different arguments you could make about it. So they might have their own, or they would have their own sort of personal view, but they also would hold that a little bit loosely because they'd see everyone else's as well. But then the introverted thinkers and feelers, as you say, they're more self-referencing. They're not going to be as aware of that spectrum, but probably, well, yeah, I think definitely they're either those reasons, the logic, or their internal values and feelings are going to be much deeper and much more worked through and much more thought through.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, that's really helpful. And what that brings to mind is an INTP I was speaking to recently. And as I was explaining to him what introverted thinking means and what it does and how it functions, I was explaining how it's self-referencing and is less referencing the ideas that are out there in the world. And I could see he sort of had an aha. He started to say, well, I do read a lot of stuff and I do look at a lot of stuff. And then the next sentence was, but I do kind of decide if they're wrong. And if what I'm reading is wrong, then I reject it. And it was just such a classic example of, I've got my own internal logic framework. And yes, I go out there to the world, but I vet that through my matrix of what I've already worked out to be true or false, etc. Whereas I've seen, and I'm thinking of someone with extroverted thinking, I've seen, as you say, Caitlin, a much greater openness to be swayed by the perspectives of the logic perspectives of the tribe when it comes to extroverted thinking.
As we're talking about that, what's coming to mind is that these parts of our personality always need to be in balance. Like, that's the healthiest way. So we're always going to have a preference and a strength depending on what our personality is. But, you know, if we go all in on one of these things, then it becomes out of whack. So for those who are using extroverted thinking or feeling, I suppose their tendency would be to not check in with themselves enough. They wouldn't know what they think or what they feel. They would just always be looking to other people or other things outside of themselves. And that can be, you know, people can get into people pleasing and doing just what everyone else wants them to do, and never even, if they're a little bit in touch with what they want, they don't feel like they have permission to do that. And maybe they don't even really know what they want or what they think. And then for people who use introverted thinking or feeling, they're unhealthy tendency would be, well, to not check in with the outside world. So they might get quite stubborn in their ways. It can appear that they're very selfish to other people because they can be, you know, not flexible. If they're not balanced, they're not going to care what the outside world is saying or thinking or feeling. And of course, then, you know, you can do that. They might enjoy that, but obviously in that can affect on their relationships as well. And also, I think the other tendency can be that, I think this happens often with introverted thinking, when people with that function, they'll get an idea and they'll sort of go really deep with it. Like, you know, maybe they're like making a computer program or something. They'll go, you know, work on it for 3 years, but they haven't actually checked in if somebody else has already made it, or, you know, they'll be so out of touch of what the world's,
yeah, they haven't
doing.
Checked in as if there's a need for that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just, oh, I have this idea and this would be cool. And, you know, again, you can do that and maybe that person would find that a valid use of time, but that can be something when it's out of whack that can happen. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I can think of a number of friends that I have that have invented things that already existed or, you know, ideas that they've come up with. And me, as someone who's more tribe referencing, goes, oh, yeah, this person's already written a book on that, or this item already exists in this form that's, you know, almost identical to what you've come up with. And I've always been impressed with them. Like, whoa, I wish I could do that. But at the same time, it's not always useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always a need.
Yeah. One of the things this understanding has really been helpful for is seeing how it plays out in our relationships. So romantic relationships and any friendships, where if you, depending on what your perspective is, and if you're using an introverted or extroverted decision function, that so much affects how you see the world and how you're navigating in the world. And then if other people are using the opposite, if you don't really understand what's going on, it can really cause issues. we both use extroverted feeling, and so are coming at the world from that perspective. But you were thinking of an example of this playing out.
Yeah, I was going to say a great example. I don't know if it's a great example, but it was the moment for me where I feel like this started to land and make sense. Some years ago, I used to attend a philosophy group with a bunch of mates, and we'd always start at a cafe, and then, you know, a few hours in, someone would say, hey, time for lunch, and we'd make a move. This particular day, I actually had to go to work, and so I had limited time before I was going to have to head off for work, and that was known. And I remember this particular day, someone said, hey, let's get lunch. And someone suggested this burger joint. And one or two other people were saying, yeah, it's good burgers. And kind of immediately just headed off down that track. But for me, it was in the opposite direction of where my car was located. And I knew that walking further would mean I had less time to be with a group. And like my time was soon to run out. And I felt a bit miffed and a bit hurt that I hadn't been taken into consideration. And it all just kind of culminated in feeling like, why am I not connecting with these people and these guys who are interested in philosophy and, you know, on paper, more similar to me than a lot of the other guys that I've never connected with the typical bloke or guy. And felt like on paper these people should be that. And what I came to realize was that in that group, I was probably the only person with an extroverted feeling decision-making process, which is a process that functions more naturally within a group of women where there's that impulse to check in with all your other girlfriends about who wants what when and, you know, where will we go for lunch? And what does everyone... And it can almost be too much where no one wants to put anyone else out. And so it's hard to make a decision. Whereas generally speaking, with a bunch of blokes, statistically you have less extroverted feeling present. And so I realized, yeah, we've got a bunch of guys here, but a lot of them were self-referencing. That the feeling piece comes in here too, because non-feelers aren't going to be taking the feeling piece into consideration as much. But in short, I see this as a good example of the dynamic that plays out when there's a few in the group that are self-referencing.
Yeah, in some of my friendships, it'll especially be in the context of me with other mums and, you know, asking favors with helping with the kids and stuff. I have one friend who I do know her personality type, and she uses introverted feeling. And so I'll just always notice subtle differences in how we communicate and how we interact within these types of contexts. So for me, as an extroverted feeler, I have this compulsion to kind of go over the top with my communication about the feelings of things. And if I'm asking somebody a favor, I'll, you know, preempt it with, if you can't do this, it's totally okay. And if I'm asking, you know, say, are you sure this is okay? And
flowery language.
Flowery language, assuring them I'm not being put out, even if maybe I am, you know, making sure everybody in the situation's feeling okay about it on the outside, in the outside world. But I noticed that, especially this one person with introverted feeling, there just isn't that compulsion. And so, you know, I'll send a long message about, oh, could you pick up Isabel from school because I need to do this, and then I can, you know, repay the favor in this way. And, you know, it'll be kind of a long, I'll often, you know, use too many words. And then I'll just get the reply back that says, sure, sounds good. And it took me a while to understand, well, because that can come across to me through my lens of seeing it, that, oh, maybe she's secretly a little bit annoyed. Maybe it's, you know, she kind of can, but doesn't really want to. So she's being a bit short with her communication. But I've now had to learn that and understood, which gives me a lot more freedom in the whole dynamic, that actually she just doesn't have that compulsion to make sure everything's okay. It's okay within her. She's not going to agree to something she's actually not okay with because of that introverted feeling. She's aware of her limits, and that's been very helpful.
No, I think that's a good example. I suppose it's worth just also pointing out for anyone who's listening in that may discover they have introverted feeling and maybe don't resonate with this example, I suppose it's a continuum. The extroverted feelers are the ones that struggle with boundaries the most. That's quite well established. And then there's sort of a continuum of how this all plays out with all the other types. Because, for example, an INFP will struggle to do what you've described, and INFPs have introverted feeling. So there's some nuance to it. This isn't the podcast to go into all of that, but in simple terms, the person with introverted feeling is going to have a more clear sense of what they need and want compared to, say, an extroverted feeler. Now, if you take, for example, the thinking processes, introverted thinking, which is literally the mirror opposite of, or the other side of the coin of extroverted feeling, that would be at the other end of the spectrum of functions and the degree to which they are interested in or care about the needs, desires, perspectives of others and the tribe. So if you have at one end the codependent extroverted feeler, at the other end of the continuum you've got the unfeeling or reclusive, selfish, introverted thinker. These are the extremes. These are the unhealthy expressions of that. So this is a bit all over the place. I'm not super linear in my explanations here, but it probably bears saying a few comments about extroverted thinking and then seeing how this ties into intimate relationships, because I think that's where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
A way I've seen extroverted thinking show up amongst friends, as I've been keeping an eye out to comprehend how it functions, is that where I might be looking at the emotions of the tribe, say, for example, we're going to head out for a day trip, I might be making sure that we're leaving at a time that suits everyone, so no one's going to have to get up too early because that will make them feel bad, and generally just sort of trying to make everyone feel comfortable. The extroverted thinker, who also has a level of motivation about people having a good experience, will go about it in a different way. And so what I've observed that they'll tend to do is serve the tribe more logistically and more practically. So they're more likely to go out there and do the research and work out what the cheapest ticket price available is for the things that you're going to go do that day, or discover the best and quickest route to driving there to optimize use of resources. Or they might create some kind of a poll with everyone that's involved to work out who wants what. They might be motivated with an emotional aspect to give everyone a good experience, but the way they actually work it out is they will meet that need in a practical way.
Mm-hmm. And again, because they're seeing that spectrum of things, it'll be that thing like, yeah, doing the research on, you know, seeing all of the ticket prices or seeing all that. I mean, we have one friend who, again, is another school mom, who she's our go-to. She always knows what's going on, and she's the communicator online. And that really, you know, that's how she connects with people. And we're all very, very grateful, because she's always making things efficient and seeing the logistics and all of the things that need to be done. Yeah.
Great example.
Mm.
So how does this show up in intimate relationships? So if we look at relationships specifically, I've personally found this to be just so high leverage when working with couples. The quintessential example in my mind is the couple that come in. It's like almost a stereotype in society where you have the emotional or even emotionally intelligent woman in the dynamic and the quote-unquote unfeeling man. And what I've come to observe as a common pattern is that I will have a couple of that sort of dynamic sitting in front of me, and I realize that the man isn't actually unfeeling. He's just using introverted feeling. So he's doing his feelings on the inside. They're by definition invisible. And so he may actually feel very deeply. And I've had couples where the woman is a thinker and the man is a introverted feeler. And so he's actually deeply feeling oriented and deeply sensitive and repeatedly gets his feelings hurt because, number one, men don't have feelings, and number two, he's struggling to express that, and he hasn't got the language to contextualize what's happening for him. So that's one really common and profound way I've seen it showing up when working with couples. I'm wondering if you have any examples of how this is showing up in relationship, whether it be with us or anything else that comes to mind.
One thing I've often thought of in this arena is sort of how first understanding these differences in your relationship, understanding if you're coming from different perspectives, what that other person's experience is, you know, understanding that, oh, they are feeling deeply, I just can't see it, especially if you're somebody who would be more emotive. So understanding where they're coming from and how they're seeing the world and how they're making decisions, and then not expecting them to be the same as you. So that's sort of the first step is the understanding. But as you then grow and I suppose accept your partner for where they're coming from, you really can then switch those things that might be initially an annoyance or a stress on the relationship because, you know, they're doing it wrong or they're not seeing things the same way. You can then use that tool because the thing is we need all of these functions to live in life. You know, we need our emotions, we need the logic, and we need it all. And so if you have a difference there, you actually have a gift to be able to navigate the world together quite well as a team.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, this is my goal when working with couples and type. It's to first help illuminate what's going on, which can be enormously healing. Even had someone recently who just found healing learning, hey, I'm a bloke with a feeling bias or a feeling, you know, so that can bring healing. But then after that, this is specifically with couples, it's about flipping that script. It's about seeing what the gift and the blessing is in your partner's functions, your partner's particular flavor. And if I speak to us and our relationship a bit, we haven't had tension and conflict around the decision-making function because we use the same decision-making function. But what we have had is gaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So whilst we haven't got an inherent conflict because we're basically speaking the same language, at a practical, functional, day-to-day level, we've got gaps. We don't have someone in this relationship that has a strong introverted decision-making function, either introverted thinking or introverted feeling. And we both have introverted thinking as our third function. So when we need to do some introverted thinking, we're kind of both...
We're both not in our strength. We're both having to work really hard. Yeah.
We're both fluster a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all like to think we're good at our third function, but in reality, it's not either of our strengths, and it's not the strength of our relationship. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose to speak specifically to that dynamic, especially with extroverted feeling, you know, it's taken us a lot of years, and we're lucky that we'd done, probably before we got together, we'd both done a little bit of our own growth in this area, because we both, with extroverted feeling, could have the tendency to become very codependent and very like only worried about the other person's feelings, not ever looking after our own needs. You know, that can be a classic trap that people fall into. And in some ways, early on, we did do that, and we had to sort of separate a bit. And I mean, you had, well, really, that was you, that you were more able to first separate yourself and not get pulled under when I had like massive needs, and make me stand on my own feet and figure out more how to not depend on you only, and then, you know, the other way around. To now, I mean, 11 years in, I think we're quite healthy in that way, but that could have been, and at some points was, a big trap that we would have fallen into.
Yeah, I mean, I'd stop rescuing people by that point is what you're saying. So I suppose that's the major points we wanted to hit. As you can hear, it's kind of a complicated idea. It does take a while to grasp, but my hope is that this at least starts to open up your eyes to find some curiosity where there may have been judgment before in the people in your life. One of the biggest takeaways I got from studying counseling was two lecturers that just would bang on and on and on about stay curious, remain curious. Because even if we've been with our partner for 20 years, we don't know every nook and cranny of who they are. And we all have introverted functions within our personality. So every single person has invisible parts to how they're functioning. But I think especially if their decision-making function is introverted, there's a little bit more of a task or a little bit more of a challenge for those that are close to them to fully understand what's making them tick, just because it's unseeable, let's say. Whereas the extroverted functions are more obvious. You can see those functioning when you look at someone.
I suppose for somebody who has an introverted decision-making function, their task in a relationship would be to find ways to bring their partner into that. And of course, from their partner too, to be curious and to ask.
So if one's to be curious, the other is to be gracious.
Mm, yeah.
And in almost like have that risk of inviting them into their introverted world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
So I reckon we'll leave it there. My personal goal with this was really just to give a bit of the technical background to say, hey, we're all making decisions in different ways, and likely the person that you're in close relationship with has got a different function. Caitlin and I are a bit unique in that way, but most couples have a different decision-making function. And to remain curious, to do that research, do that legwork to try and work out what their function is and then learn about it. And actually, that's something I offer. I offer personality profiling. So if you're feeling like a quick online test isn't quite figuring you out because, you know, they're not perfect, then feel free to reach out. But other than that, that's all I had from my end. Caitlin, was there any other comments that you wanted to make?
No, I think we covered it all well. And if you've been listening along this whole time and you haven't been quite sure which of those categories you fit into, if you do know your personality type, it's easy to just look up on Google cognitive function. So you'd put in your personality type, so ENFP cognitive functions, and then you'd easily be able to see what those are and see which ones you're using if you haven't quite gotten that deep into the Myers-Briggs system to know how the functions work.
That's good. Yeah, thanks. I forgot to mention that part. Well, that's all we have for today on Convergently Speaking. So until next time, remain curious.
Hi, it's Caitlin again. Just wanted to pop in at the end to remind you that you can find Dan on Instagram and Facebook, and his website is danielanir.com, where you can see the services he offers and book an appointment. Also, if you wanted to chime in on the conversation we just had, leave us a comment on social media. We'd love to hear what you thought about this episode.